You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Burning questions.
Insightful answers.
Listener's Choice.
With Clement Maniatela.
So Listener's Choice feature is exactly that. It's your choice as a listener. Whatever we discuss on Listener's Choice is what you have decided. And how do you decide that? Well, you can send me an email on cm@702.co.za if you want to suggest a topic on Listener's Choice. Maybe it's something we have not sufficiently explored and you want us to bring in the right experts to talk about it. And it can be anything, any subject matter. We've discussed different things on Listener's Choice. Today, there's a listener who has asked that we look at the roles and responsibilities of ministers in South Africa. He sent us an email and said, Entleg, what do the ministers do? We see them visiting places. We see them accounting in parliament. Well, some of them. We see them cutting ribbons, launching programs. They contribute to policy formulation, even though someone else can say, not so much. It's more their advisors and DG who actually do the work. But when they get to office on a Monday or today on a Wednesday, what do they actually do? Do they even go to their offices? And I think these are valid questions. We know they have oversight responsibility over the department. They are the so-called executive political authority and they work with accounting officers. But what's that work that they do? Because also if you look at the benefits that they have in the ministerial handbook and the amount of money they are paid, they should be doing a lot more, right? And I want us to also revisit the conversation you and I once had about the issue of executive oversight, the concept of interference versus intervention. Because you really have to look at the separation of their roles, the ministers themselves as the executive authority and the accounting officers. So that as an executive, you know where to draw the line so that you don't interfere in the running of the department by an accounting officer. But then if the expectation is for the executive authority not to get too involved in operational aspects of their department, how do they effectively exercise oversight and ensure effective administration? And how do we ensure politicians don't hide behind this separation of powers and plead ignorance when their departments are called into questions? So if you've got some questions around their responsibilities, you've got some input, you can give us a call on 011-883-0702 or send me a WhatsApp voice note on 072-702-1702. Dr. Kagiso Poe is a senior lecturer at the Wits School of Governance. He's going to guide us through this discussion. Dr. Poe, thank you so much for making time. Good morning.
Good morning, Clement, and thanks for having me.
These people are getting paid a lot of money. What do they actually do?
Look, I think you've given a brief, you kind of summarized it quite well, but if one had to just, as you said, it's to provide political leadership vision and policy direction, oversee and monitor implementation of policy, represent the ministry at cabinet and parliament, which everybody knows. And then I think the one everybody, I think it kind of has issues with, account publicly for the performance of the ministry and obviously take collective responsibility for cabinet decisions. Because again, if you read chapter 5 of the South African Constitution, it's the president that gives the existence of ministries. You'd notice South Africa doesn't really have a set formula of which ministries should or should not exist. So a lot of times over the last three decades, it's really come from the president, and this is what their work is supposed to be. Now, vis-a-vis what you said, what do they do? Well, you can only use other countries' examples from how they're supposed to be the ones that, from the word go,
Dr. Paul, I'm losing you there. Let me quickly put you back to the producer so we can fix that line. It's not the best, and I want us to understand fully what you are saying. So we are talking about the roles and responsibilities of ministers, and Dr. Paul has just outlined, you know, their responsibility in providing that policy direction, the vision, you know, their account publicly, and he was just about to give us some examples now. So I see we fixed that line now. So let's go back. Dr. Poe, we've got you on a better line now. So just continue from the point you were making about the example you were stating.
Apologies for that. So, for instance, if you have a policy, let's say in the case of local government, where you are basically looking to promote local economic development, your job is to actually get the brief from your provincial counterparts and also from the mayors, those reports, so that when you do make a decision about policy, you actually know what's happening at the ground level.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, there's a show I always advise my students to watch. It's called Minister. It was a British show which kind of gives you the daily breakdown of what ministers and prime ministers. It said, hello, prime minister. But you're supposed to be up to date of what's happening in particular areas or your policy subject areas. And the point said that, you know, sometimes the advisors are the ones that do the policy in the DG. Well, once you have said, listen, my party has said that this is the policy we're going through the normal government procedure, I'm actually supposed to monitor, is the department action of making sure that this policy works? And a lot of times, what tends to happen in South Africa, and this is maybe where the problem comes in, and I like the way that you use it, intervention versus being oversight.
Yes.
Where our ministers sometimes will go to a particular area because that area, let's say,
Okay, Dr. Poy, I'm putting you back. Maybe let's cut this call. Call on a separate line. This line is not the best. Let's try maybe find a landline. It keeps on cutting. We hear what you say, but the line just keeps on cutting. You and I once had a conversation about this concept of oversight versus intervention. I remember there was a time when in the news, there was a story about the education department in Gauteng having spent over 430 million rand on disinfecting schools in just 3 months. And you know what the MEC of Education, Panyaza Lesufi, said when he supposedly found out? He said he's dismayed. He didn't know so much money had been spent. And people were asking, but how is it that you don't know how your department was spending money? How do you not know that? And that's where the separation of roles for the executive authority and accounting officers comes in. Even think about Bandile Masuku, for instance, in his case with the SIU. Remember, the investigation unit found that he did not exercise the necessary executive oversight on alleged acts of corruption in the procurement of PPE by the department. And he, just like Lesufi, were arguing that, well, I wouldn't have known because the law prohibits me as the executive authority, as the political principal, from being involved in the day-to-day runnings of the department and the contracts of services and service providers, etc., etc. So what is executive oversight? Even when it comes to ministers, what is executive oversight? And where do you draw the line so that you don't interfere in the running of the department by an accounting officer? Right? How do we ensure also politicians do not hide behind this separation of powers and plead ignorance when their departments are called into question? Because this becomes important in the conversation we're having around the roles and responsibilities of ministers. Because often when the proverbial ish hits the fan, you don't go to the DG. You call out the minister, don't you? You don't wait for the DG. You call out the minister. And sometimes the minister will say to you, well, I'm prohibited. There's a thin line here that I can't cross. Otherwise, I'm breaking the law. Okay, we've got Dr. Kagiso Poe now on Zoom. Hopefully, that's going to be a much better line. Dr. Poe, you were talking about this separation of powers, executive authority versus the accounting officers and what their roles are.
Yes. Is this much clearer?
Much clearer. Go ahead.
All right. No, it's at a level of day-to-day administration where the ministers are not supposed to, and this is always the confusion in South Africa, is that the minister is not supposed to say to Clement, I believe that, you know, that job that you're doing, you should do it in this way. And I believe that you should favor X person when you want to take such a decision, because that's what's termed the day-to-day administrative interface. What the minister is supposed to have an oversight of is to say, Clement, you made a decision, to advance the policy we've chosen. Mm. I noticed that you went with with this decision, I noticed this is the amount, and I noticed that in the processes that you went through, you kind of did not flag that this could possibly be a risk to the department. Yeah. Why is that the case? So that's one level. A second level is those ministerial oversight committees in parliament or sometimes in legislatures, where they're also supposed to dig deep into the decisions which have been made to flag to the minister, say, minister, this is also what's happening. So there's sufficient enough room for a minister to raise, you know, even concerns about the performance of their department. But unfortunately, in South Africa, sometimes ministers tend to want to overstep their mark and do the day-to-day administrative duties. And because they get stuck in that quagmire, I sometimes feel as though they get confused in terms of what their actual job was supposed to be. So in short, it's supposed to be, you've chosen a policy, this is your department. When we ask you, what has your department achieved or not achieved, you are supposed to be able to, in a day-to-day course, set up a system in place which says, this is how I account for what my department has or has not done. And that's what they're supposed to do in their day-to-day job. But sometimes, I guess maybe it's a personality. Certain ministers are more partial to wanting to be seen more in the TV space, to be seen to be doing things.
Yes.
And then they get into trouble. And I always use this example. And I used to work at local government. A minister, a mayor, an MEC will go to a community which they should have known about in the course of them serving. They'll say, hey, Clement and your community, I see you have no water. DG, please make sure that next time I come here that there's water.
Yeah.
You see, once you do that, you're circumventing processes, because this is something you should have known from the start going to that community.
Yeah.
Now, you basically are putting administrators under pressure to say, because I did not see this problem in my 4 to 5 years, I'm not asking you to re-channel, you know, budgets to basically look after this particular problem. Then communities become confused because they're like, oh, so if the minister was here, this would have been sorted. So the people we must blame are the administrators.
And
that's where it becomes very tricky.
The next time the community protests and they don't want to see the mayor, they don't want to see the premier, they want the minister, because they've seen the last time the minister was here, instructed the DG to ensure that there's a road that is built, and then the road was built. And we've seen it even when President Cyril Ramaphosa goes and visits and then they'll say, we'll build a home. And then the home is going to be built. But as you say, there's that circumvention of processes where the DG is under pressure. I want to ask you about who has the influence on the minister, because, I mean, it's not really them who sit and they go through the documentation. They've got advisors, right, Dr. Boy, and they've got the DG who will, I imagine, update them about the work on the administration side of this ministry. And then you've got the advisors who then help with whether it's policy formulation or policy direction and the vision. So is it the minister who's got a lot of influence? Because sometimes DGs are fired and you realize that actually it's not even that the minister didn't like the DG or thought the DG is incompetent, but one of the advisors of the minister didn't like that DG, because maybe the DG is not taking instructions from them.
You're asking a very controversial question there, Clement, especially that one of the question of the advisors. Look, as I said, I always like using international precedents. Globally, you as a minister are actually expected to actually know what's happening. There's something called what you're supposed to get is a political brief, which gives you a summation of the day-to-day activities and decisions from parliament to different committees that are happening. So the question of the minister can't know everything. Well, if in the UK, in China, and other places, there is an expectation. You should know, because that's what you're getting paid for. You asked me about the day-to-day job. Think about it. Your job from Monday sometimes to Sunday, if you're really a hardworking minister, is to get your office, and this is where the role of advisors come in. You're supposed to pick advisors which complement maybe sometimes your weaknesses or your interests. And they are supposed to set up a system to say, listen, Minister Clement, you were worried about the issue in Hammanskraal about water. This is a history of the problem. These are the interventions which are set to come in. So you're supposed to be knowledgeable about that. And that's what sometimes the issue of advisors has been wrongfully used in South Africa, because, look, I don't think it's a secret, especially with the ANC government. They use it as sometimes a point of doling out privileges to people in the party who sometimes, look, they were not able to find employment, or sometimes they are actual subject matter specialists. So there's no rule, the fast and hard rule about it. And then you'll see certain ministers perform better than others. a minister I always use as an example of excellence. People can have their queries. Minister Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma. If you notice her history and trajectory, every ministry she went to, she made a point of knowing what was happening, getting the right advisors, and also asking for the right DG to come in. Mm-hmm. So when that triangle is in place, which is a competent minister, subject matter specialist advisors, and sometimes political advisors who can kind of clear the way politically, and a competent DG, things work. Unfortunately, what we're tending to see is that this triangle does not work for every minister. And sometimes it's a weakness of the very minister that collapses the triangle. Because if you look at, I think there's some research that over the last 5 years or 10 years, we've been having acting DGs about for 60, if not 70% of government departments. So you can understand why things are not working. Because if you don't have that security of a DG for an 80 or 70% of departments, what do you think the end result is going to be?
Mm-hmm, exactly. I've got a message from a message from Peter on the WhatsApp line. He says, Clement, so when money is being spent wisely, then the minister is happy to be on TV. But if there's 500 million rand waste that is wasted, then the minister says it's not. That's a reality, right, Dr. Poe? And that's where you think, where do you even give the credit? Because when the department is done well and there's a clean audit, the minister wants to be the one on television that's going to hold a press briefing. And sometimes there's not even a DG anywhere close to that minister, as if the minister is the one who really, with their vision, this is why we're here. And then the minute there's an unqualified audit or something has gone wrong with the departments, now they want to bring in the DG to come and explain what on earth is going on.
No, I think that the thing is, they are only as right as you are wrong, which basically is shorthand for when it's sunny outside, I am right.
Yeah.
Right. When it's gloom and doom, you are incorrect. So that's an unfortunate thing. And I think it sends a negative message across society, because it basically says, if we don't get to the level of maturity where we kind of see exactly what ministers do and are not supposed to do correctly, it basically means you who's going into government, we have a wrong perception of what government is and is not about. And I think I think also one of the weaknesses I've always said in my research is it would be good if we had set numbers of ministries and we actually had actual objectives set out by the president. I know they've got performance-based things, which none of us actually get to see.
They've never been consistent about
that. But it would be a good way for us. Yeah, it would be good for us to actually see, listen, this minister, because remember I said it comes from Chapter 5 of the Constitution. Mm. When the president put you in there, what was the goal? And can we all see it? Then it would make it easier for you and I then to objectively be able to say, look, you're doing well, you're not doing well. Because in the absence of that, what we do see, unfortunately, is certain, like now, as I said, the reason why I can literally say there's a handful of ministers who, if you go through the reports, you can see that there's work being done. But then the key question, and I think your listeners always raise this, is then what are you getting paid for? Because I think we also need to get to a point, and I'll keep harping on that, we need to get to a point, and I raise this, that the minister's performance needs to be linked to pay, which is 50% standard pay, because we can't take that away from people. But then the rest of the 50% needs to be performance. Once we see that, and this happens in countries like Singapore and others, then I can guarantee you and I will know exactly which ministers are doing well and not doing well.
Exactly. Oh my goodness. I wish we could get to that point. Let me play this quick WhatsApp voice note.
Morning, Clement. Please ask your guest, is Mr. Begitele doing it right, or he's just infringing on his role as the Minister of Police? Thanks.
Well, that's unfair, because Dr. Poe doesn't really know. But I mean, I think they're asking from your observation. I mean, Begitele is almost everywhere. And there are people that have argued, Dr. Poe, that sometimes he encroaches on the work of the National Police on operational matters. So sometimes even when there was a time when the police managed to foil a robbery or some criminal activity, the minister is there. But when you listen to the minister, actually the commissioner would have given us more details about what happened and what operationally is expected to unfold. But the minister just wants to take over.
No, and I think that's it. Look, like I said, this is where the objective truth would have been nice, that the president told us, what exactly do you expect from a minister of police? I always make the argument that the minister of police and the Minister of Justice should actually be, it should be one office. And especially when it comes to operational things like, you know, security is, it's one of those things where you really need to understand the people who shouldn't be making a judgment, but I doubt they'll call because of, correctly so, is the men who are in the black and blue uniform. They're the ones who should be able to say, listen, what is their morale like? Do they feel as though their work is being appreciated? Two, have they got the correct tools of trade?
Mm.
And if you look at what, based on research, a lot of this has been created as one of the reasons why the SAPS is basically not performing. So I think in that situation, we do need to have a rethink on these types of specialized, you know, I call them professional types of departments. As in, I don't think we need a minister of police. I think we need a minister of justice.
Mm.
And within this ministry of justice, the National Police Commissioner should really be the person driving how we interact and how we view performance. Because it's such a specialized service that you'd feel sorry for any minister who doesn't come from the ground up to understand that. But we understand that in the absence of having such, that's why the National Police Commission exists. And I think that's where I don't really think you need that ministry. There's certainly a lot of ministries I think we should cut down, which would make it easier for us to actually see. And I think also enhance the performance of a lot of ministers.
Mm-hmm. So as we wrap up, we're out of time. In a nutshell, this 2.5 million rand ministers earn, that's just not justified, is it?
No, there is no justification whatsoever. Okay. What they should be earning 500,000 as a standard base.
Yeah.
And if we want to take it to a million, the next 500,000 should come from what is your performance and have you met those criteria for performance?
Yeah. Now do that and see how many people will avail themselves for this position of ministers and deputy ministers. Dr. Kagiso Poe, always great chatting to you. I appreciate your time. Senior lecturer at the Wits School of Governance.